So, welcome everybody to Pixel Politics, the podcast, episode 9. This is the show that educates us about politics and history using video games. Today is a very special episode. We haven't just got one special guest, we have two special guests today. We have Gemma Renshaw. She is a PhD student and she's interested in museum collection management, and she has her main interests are in ancient Egypt, history, Egyptology, archaeology, and as I said, museum collections. She works for a fantastic organization called Playing in the Past, alongside her companion, which is Chris Norton. He's an Egyptologist, a writer, a broadcaster. He's a writer of a few different books. For example, the Egyptologist Notebook, published in October 2020, and has done loads of other TV work and book writing as well. So thank you both for joining me. It's a pleasure to have you both on.
Thank you for the
invite. Yeah, thanks for having us.
It's a pleasure. So I just want to start by perhaps you both could introduce yourselves about what you do in the industry and what your work is in general.
Yeah, okay, I'll go first then. So my name is Gemma Renshaw. I actually do quite a lot of different things. I work for a university, UCL. I work for UCL Culture, which has the Petrie Museum of Egyptian and Sudanese Archaeology, the Grant Museum of Zoology and Comparative Anatomy, and the Art Museum, and also the Pathology Museum, which is at the Royal Free Hospital. All of them currently closed because of COVID, but hopefully being able to open soon. But I do collection management work for UCL Culture. I am also a PhD student at Southampton University, which is where I'm studying a 19th century archive of a man called Robert Hay, who went to Egypt in the early 19th century. He collected antiquities and he created this massive portfolio of drawings and notes about what he was seeing when he visited the different sites in the 19th century. And I'm here today with Jack and Chris because I am the project leader for our project called Playing in the Past, where we are attempting to explore ideas about ancient Egypt through the medium of a video game called Assassin's Creed Origins, which we think is a really good visual representation of ancient Egypt that we can use as a tool to explore ideas about the ancient past. So that's me.
Thank you, Gemma.
Hello, I'm Chris Norton. I am an Egyptologist, freelance these days. So I occupied in non-COVID times with, going to Egypt about between 4 and 6 times a year, mostly with groups of tourists or with TV crews making documentaries. And that's all stopped, obviously, in the last year or so. And otherwise, I'm busy writing, and in the last year or so, giving a lot of online lectures. So, I'm not a gamer at all. I kind of stopped gaming when I couldn't afford new games for my Master System in about 1994, and then. So the now oft-told story goes, in the middle of last year, I needed some visualizations of ancient Alexandria, basically for a book that I was working on, an illustrated book, a children's book, actually. And when I Googled this, I found lots of images from a video game called Assassin's Creed Origins. So I thought it would be fun to wander around ancient Egypt in this game, but didn't know how to do this. So I just kind of squealed to Twitter that I didn't know how to play this game. Help! What can I do? And Gemma, who's much better versed in these things, offered to show me around, as it were, virtually. And that led to what is now a fully fledged university-funded a public engagement project. So yeah, I am sort of a gamer again, but very much a newbie.
So as part of the icebreaker question, I was going to ask you both what games you play. So Chris, obviously you just said not as much, but I'm guessing Assassin's Creed Origins probably get you back into games.
Yeah,
I'm guessing.
Yeah, absolutely. So I bought an Xbox actually.
Last summer,
having been shown around by Gemma and blown away by this, I went and bought an Xbox and Assassin's Creed, and have been wandering around since. And I also bought a Star Wars game, for what it's worth. I bought Battlefront 2, so I have been playing that a little bit. I am terrible at games. So I haven't really got very far with Battlefront, but one of the joys for me of Assassin's Creed Origins is, first of all, it has the discovery tour, which allows you to do lots of exploring without actually being in the game. But in any case, even when you're in the game, as I've found, it is possible to just run around and avoid the bad guys. So you can look at lots of interesting stuff. Without having to worry that you don't have the right sword or enough strength or energy or whatever. And so for somebody who's, like I say, terrible at games, that's perfect for me.
Okay, so Gemma, what games do you play? Have you had a long history of playing games?
Yeah, you could say so. So my brother is a little bit older than me. He is 5.5 years older than me, and so when I was growing up, he was always interested in games, and he has got he always had like something. So he started off with the Commodore 64. We had a Sega Mega Drive, and then he moved on to having his own PC. And I was very fortunate that I had a brother who would actually let me, you know, play with him, basically. Obviously, at the time, I was always player two because I was the younger sister, and that's how that works. But yeah, I have played a lot of games in my lifetime, and I still enjoy them. I mean, if I just read you the games that are currently installed on my computer from my desktop, I've got Call of Duty Modern Warfare, Frostpunk, Jurassic World Evolution, No Man's Sky, Osmos, Pharaoh, Caesar 3, Sid Meier's Civilization 6, Railway Empire, Smite, The Elder Scrolls Online, World of Warcraft, Assassin's Creed Black Flag, Syndicate, Origins, Odyssey, Valhalla, Assassin's Creed Chronicles, Valheim, Among Us, and Nebuchadnezzar. Those are the games that are currently installed on my computer.
Well, I can imagine you put in a lot of hours, especially into the Elder Scrolls and Assassin's Creed games.
I've got a lot of hours in Elder Scrolls Online, days and days worth of time. I also have a lot of hours in the game called Pharaoh. Pharaoh is a 1999 game, which I played when I was a kid and was not very good at when I was a kid. But now that I'm older and I'm a little bit better at kind of, you know, the micromanagement of things like economy and trade, because I understand a bit better how they work now.
Yeah.
I'm able to play that game in the harder difficulties, and so I still play it. And I had it as a child, and I bought it again through Steam. And my Steam account alone has got about 500 hours worth of time on it.
Wow.
So I do still play games quite a lot. I don't sleep very much.
No, join the club on that one. Like as a student, because I'm just currently in my master's, and as the viewers know, kind of, I've done my undergrad. But yeah, no, those nights were just spent playing video games with pals. Like, you know, I should have been doing essays, but sometimes didn't work that way.
Yeah, it's a common problem. I mean, obviously being older, I have lots of other stuff I need to do, because I have a job to do and things as well. So it very much cuts down on the time I get to play games these days. But because games, for me, they're something I enjoy. They're something I grew up with. They were part of my life for a really long time, because my brother actually works in the video game industry. He lives in America, though, so he's not over here on any video games over here. But he does that for his job. So it's always been there, even at times when I haven't actually actively played games. You know, I've always had him there who talks to me about the games that he's making. And, you know, like he's an artist, so he works on environments. So I still was kind of, you know, enmeshed in that even when I was doing other things. So I don't have a great deal of time at the moment to play games other than for playing the past, where I need to play Assassin's Creed Origins. Hopefully we will be looking at some of the other ones in the series. That's why they're all downloaded onto my computer. So hopefully we'll get there at some point. But yeah, I do try to limit my time because I also do need to write my PhD and, you know, do my job.
So I talk about playing in the past. What kind of, how did you come up with the idea of using the Assassin's Creed Origins to help explain certain aspects of ancient Egypt? Was that something that had been sort of cooking in the back of both your minds for a long time? And then you kind of just, you put it into place, or is it something that you saw the game itself and was like, oh, I could just, we could do something with it, or maybe we could try it out for a trial period? Or
I don't think, it certainly wasn't in my mind. I think it must, Gemma, I think it must have been your idea. I mean, basically once Gemma had volunteered to show me and Kate, who was in the conversation on Twitter, around, I guess we were already kind of trialing the idea in that, you know, we all have a certain, some sort of academic knowledge of ancient Egypt, and Gemma has also got the game's expertise, and Gemma was showing us around, and me and Kate, you know, we're both sort of there, you know, in our respective offices, and kind of looking on and sort of just saying, wow, and, you know, and can we go there and can we do that and what's that and when what's in there, and you know, the idea of giving talks, you know, broadcasting stuff like old-fashioned lectures online has become such a big part of the way our subjects, and no doubt lots of other academic subjects, get done in the last year. It was just, I guess, really obvious to just say, well, why don't we invite some other people? And Gemma, again, I should really be letting Gemma answer this question. Gemma has the know-how in terms of Twitch, etc., when it, you know, as to how we should do this, and so we went from there, I guess. Is that fair, Gemma?
Yeah, definitely. I just want to say I don't already have the know-how. I did have to learn how.
Oh, okay. You learn it pretty quickly.
I did have
teach me.
I probably can, but I forget what things are called. That's my main problem. Some people are trying to help me with stuff.
My problem is with like OBS, because you guys must use OBS or like a streaming sort of service.
Yeah,
like,
I've got OBS.
You need big hardware for that, and my computer keeps crashing whenever I try and load it up. So that's my main problem with that. So you must be a whiz. You want to play it slightly. You must be a whiz.
Well, I do. You know, I mean, I was in the position where because I play games, I have got a computer that is capable of playing these games. You know, not everybody is in the position where they've got a system that can actually run these games. Mm-hmm. I already have that. So Chris, part of the reason why Chris couldn't actually work out how to do it was because he has a Mac. So it wouldn't, you know, it's just not compatible with the game. And so that was why he was initially asking for help. But like the idea behind this is something I've thought about before. It's just that I didn't have a way to do it, and I didn't immediately know what the best way to approach it would be. But I have thought about using games to teach before. Mm. And in fact, when I very first started at Southampton University to do my PhD, I agreed to work for this company called The Brilliant Club, who they put on special teaching, kind of a set of sessions that are for kids who show great potential in various subjects, but are from more deprived backgrounds, and so might not think of going to university or have the opportunity to kind of study more and to go to university. So that project is about thinking about how you can support those kids and giving them opportunities to learn about different things. Yeah. And the thing that I taught them I did a course which was called, what was it called? Representation of Ancient Egypt. Modern Representations of Ancient Egypt is what I called the course. And I talked about how ancient Egypt has been represented from the 19th century, which I consider to be the kind of start of modern, up until the present day. So we talked about things like paintings and engravings, but then we also talked about video games and film. So one of the things I got them to do was they wrote an essay on the first 10 minutes of the 1999 film The Mummy, where I got them to look at what the Egyptian environment was like and what the people were like, and got them to comment on that. And one of their other assignments was to come to my lesson and to play Pharaoh. That was their lesson.
That was like a dream lesson.
So I brought my my computer with Steam loaded onto it, with Pharaoh on it, and I gave them each, I gave groups of them. So there were only six, there were only 12 of them in each session, and I gave them half an hour for each group of six to play Pharaoh and then to tell me what they learned about ancient Egypt from playing that game. Because Pharaoh is actually quite an interesting one because it's a city building game. So, you know, you have to build the cities. But it teaches you things like, it teaches you the Egyptian names of the cities, you know, which is quite a good thing. Because if you play Prince of Civilization, you know, quite for earlier versions of Civilization, the cities all had their kind of Greek-styled names. Some of them now are not. Some of them now are their Egyptian-style names. And it's like those differences are quite significant. And for Pharaoh to have gone to the effort to actually use the Egyptian words for the cities, you know, and it has things like if you need to mine, for instance, copper, you know, copper in the game is in the locations that it really is in real life. So you can't mine for copper if you're in you know, the city of Memphis, for instance. City of Memphis in the game is not called Memphis. So it's quite, I think it still has the opportunity for you to learn from it. So I'd had this idea for quite a long time, really, and sort of thought about ways to do it. And then I saw Chris's tweet and I thought, yeah, maybe this will work, you know? And I offered to show Chris what Chris needed for his book that he was producing. And then we kind of talked about how other people might want to see what we were doing, because in the Twitter thread there were quite a number of people that were like, I'd like to come and watch this too. And initially, obviously, the idea was just that I was helping Chris to see what he needed to see. You know, it wasn't going to be for other people, but because other people showed interest, we thought, actually, maybe it would work. And that then made me return to the idea of, oh, well, I've already sort of done a bit of teaching with games, maybe we could make it into a more formalized project, and that might be something useful we could do.
So Gemma, from your perspective, do you think games are particularly great at educating? So like you said, you've had experience before, not just playing in the past but previously. You think games are great ways to educate people on historical and political ideas and events that happened? And do you think that it's, you know, for example, Assassin's Creed, Origins, Odyssey or Valhalla, as the games become more sophisticated, more realistic, do you think they also become better tools to educate? Are you seeing this trend?
In a way, they're very good. And they do help with lots of things, but you still have to be aware of the ways that they are building up on previous ideas and previous representations of the past. So for Origins in particular, because there's a lot of places that we don't have evidence for, you know, we don't know what things look like, we're not sure of various things. A lot of cities in Egypt, villages, towns, whatever, they're built on top of each other. You know, the modern city covers where the ancient site was. So the people who made Assassin's Creed Origins, Ubisoft, they had to look at kind of other sources of information as well. They couldn't. It's not like where the early Assassin's Creed games that are set in Rome. You know, you can go to Rome and you can see what it's like now, and it's much closer in time to the present. So although it wouldn't have been exactly the same, you know, they were able to copy like buildings in Florence that would have been there then that are there now. And I think that because that's not quite the same for Origins, you have to try and remember as well that whilst, yes, it is an excellent tool for immersing people in history and getting them to understand or think about what it would have been like to live in a time like that and what people were doing, you know, to understand that it's not an empty place where no one is there and nothing is happening. It's a living place that you would have been able to walk around in and engage with all the people there. You also have to remember that a lot of the things that are in there, because we don't have the direct evidence for them, they are representations. They're not exactly what was there. So they're an interpretation of the past. But it is still useful. It is still useful for sure. And it definitely brings in interest from people who might not have otherwise been interested in those periods of time, because they see the game, they enjoy the game. You know, they might go to the game for the purpose of, I want to be an assassin because it's fun. And then they actually think, actually, this place is really cool. I like it. I'm going to go and look up Egypt. I'm going to go and look up Greece and see, you know, what was it really like then? Because we do get a lot of questions, don't we, Chris, in the chat that are about, you know, is it realistic? Would it really have been like that? And I think that, that is something that people are really, really interested in knowing.
Yeah, so Chris, did this particularly surprise you when you saw Assassin's Creed Origins and you saw this big, beautiful world that had been built by Ubisoft and how you could actually learn some things from it, like, and kind of like visualize it in a way that probably we wouldn't have been expected 10 or 15 years ago? That surprised you when you just saw these images that when they popped up for you?
Yeah, it was surprising. I mean, there's a this is going to make me sound ancient, but there's a 3-volume series of books that was published in the 1980s called, in French, called Egypt Restitué, so kind of Egypt Restored, which is basically drawings of what sites in Egypt would have looked like, you know, in their heyday, 18th dynasty, or, you know, Alexandria in the time of Cleopatra, or whatever. And these are very well known, and they have been used very frequently by Egyptologists because they're, you know, they're kind of the definitive visualization of these things. So when I Googled this, looking for ancient Alexandria, I was kind of expecting to see lots of things like that. And so I was initially a bit, I was just surprised by how prevalent Assassin's Creed Origins was just in a Google search, because, you know, it kind of gave me the idea for the first time that I guess gaming and this kind of thing was much more mainstream, really, than I realized. It's not like I didn't know gaming was mainstream, but I hadn't realized it had reached into my dusty old corner of the academic world. And I mean, actually, despite not being a gamer, I am sort of interested in that kind of thing, in that I like tech and, you know, and I like sci-fi and I like, you know, reconstructions of incredible worlds. I guess that those two interests of mine had never really come together. I hadn't realized they'd come together in this way. What's kind of embarrassing about all of this in some ways is that when Origins came out, which I think was 2017, wasn't it? Something like that?
Yeah, it was.
Friends of mine who were gamers said to me at the time, there's this new game, Chris, you know, that's come out. You'd love it. It's all about ancient Egypt. And, you know, and I just honestly, I just sort of was like, yeah, whatever. You know, I'm not a gamer, you know, just didn't think about it. And having played the game a bit, having been shown around by Gemma and having played the game a bit, I was blown away by it. I mean, I think it is amazing. And they have done an incredible job, the designers, of imagining a world, but doing so armed with masses of really good information about things. So I am blown away by it. And actually, if there was anything I kind of brought to the initial sort of idea about bringing this sort of thing to a wider audience, it was that as somebody myself who didn't really know anything about this, and also somebody who by this point had spent 6 months or so giving lectures to extremely enthusiastic audiences of you know, in some cases hundreds of people who were crying out for Egyptology at a time when they couldn't go, you know, they can't go to museums, they can't go to Egypt, etc., etc., I guess I kind of knew, even if I didn't voice this thought very explicitly at the time, I knew that there would be people who would be interested, or I was confident that there would be. And, you know, when Gemma says we do get lots of questions, I think what's really interesting, actually, is we're getting lots of questions, I sense, from people from the two different worlds. There's the sort of people who were real fans of Egyptology who don't know much about games, and then there's the gamers who don't know the Egyptology side so well. I think the success of the project and the numbers we've been getting and the engagement we've been getting shows that there is really something in this. So it's all very well in some ways for me as an outsider to say, I think it's great. But it seems to me that it really works for the audience too.
Yeah. And do you think it's as a kind of, I don't know if I should use this phrase, but sort of the Egyptomania behind sort of that fascination of ancient Egypt, sort of deep rooted in British culture and American culture. That's kind of, it makes people very, very interested in ancient Egypt and what kind of treasures and mystery you can find in Egypt itself. And do you think kind of using Assassin's Creed Origins in your video game series is helped to kind of help make it gain popularity because of the fascination with Egypt? Would you say that's
correct? I think that's right. Yeah, I mean. This would only be a small number of people, you know. We've had sort of hundreds engaging with what we've been doing, I guess, in the last few weeks. I know for sure that some of those people have either bought the game or in some cases they bought hardware to play the game because of that. So that's a relatively small number of people, especially when you think that Ubisoft's Twitter account has 8.3 million followers. So on the gamer side of things, I guess everybody's already a convert. But yeah, I mean, I imagine that if you sort of went back in time to before there was ever any game in the Assassin's Creed franchise, and the designers knew full well that there was going to be a series, and they had to choose which one would be like amazingly popular, which sort of ancient historical setting, I would have thought. As with, TV production companies thinking about which bit of the ancient world to make a film about, or publishing companies thinking, which bit of the ancient world to publish books about, or museums thinking about what to do an exhibition on. You can't always make it Egypt, but I think in all those cases, people know that Egypt is going to put, eyeballs in front of video game screens, or, it's going to put people into museums, et cetera, et cetera. So, I think the coming together of those two things probably has made for a massive success.
Yeah. And so, Gemma, how did you go about promoting playing in the past? Did you contact Ubisoft and try to get them to try and put some promotional value into it? Or did you just go about it organically?
I think organically is like a nice polite word to describe what I actually did, which was not very much. I did my best, but I am not a PR person. I don't know a great deal about promoting things, and Chris was very helpful on this because Chris does know a bit more about promotional activity than I do. We had help from a very kind publicist who sort of guided us in the right direction about what we should look into doing, and the types of places that we should contact to tell them about what we were doing. And actually, with Ubisoft, I was slightly scared for no real reason other than the fact that I have a thing about copyright, because I used to work in the British Library, so I'm terrified of
any kind of copyright, especially on YouTube.
Yeah, so I was just like, I'm really scared that they might tell us to stop it. And I knew, because I know lots of people who work for the gaming industry, I knew that they really were not going to do that, because why would they step in and, say to this small project, you can't do that, when all we're really doing is talking about how much we like their game. So I was sort of like, I don't think that they will. But I just had this slight fear in the back of my head, so I was afraid of contacting them myself. And then they actually came to our stream and wrote something in the chat and said that they were going to contact me. So I was like, oh, amazing. I was
you must have just
so
been ecstatic
happy
about that.
yeah, I was so happy to see them there. And they've been really, really great. They did the interview that you saw that they wrote up for us. We had a really lovely chat with Yusuf from the Ubisoft News team who wrote up what we said into that lovely article. It did push up a lot of interest. I mean, with Ubisoft's 8.3 or whatever million followers on their Twitter account, they're not all Assassin's Creed followers. Some of them, like Rainbow Six Siege, for instance, or Far Cry, So there are lots of other sort of people there, but the fact that the article put it out there to everyone was really, really helpful. And it means that it did actually get to kind of the audience that we sort of hoped it would, which is the people who like Assassin's Creed, who are not necessarily already, interested or knowledgeable about ancient Egypt.
Yeah, and I also think because you're both experts in your field, it adds considerable value to what you're doing. So when they tune into your streams, like, they know what you're saying there is obviously factually true, and they're also going to be educated when they enter, and that's what they want.
Mm-hmm. Chris is the expert really here. I'm not. I'm the game monkey, Chris.
Well, I think you're being unfair on yourself, Gemma. quite famously, I just picked up the game, I think, on what I thought was a factual inaccuracy in Alexandria very early on that turned out to be a slight misunderstanding of the evidence on my part. Or for me for trying to be too clever, you know.
Yeah, that is one other thing that's quite good about it for us, is that it works the same way for us, because, you know, even though we know quite a lot about ancient Egypt, you know, we've never been there because you can't go there, you know. So for us, the visualization is helpful as well. It's not just for, you know, it's not like we're saying, oh, for other people because they can't imagine it, but we can. It's helpful for us to be able to visualize as well, I think. You know, for academics in general, to be able to visualize these places and what they might have been like, and as real places with real people in them doing stuff, which I think is the most important thing about games like this, that make it feel alive.
I think that is absolutely right. I mean, I haven't done this yet, but I can imagine using screenshots from Origins to show what it would have been like in some places, because while there are locations in the game which are either sort of completely made up or based on not very much evidence, they're everywhere draws on good information. There's nothing that's really like really wrong. It's mostly just a case of filling in the gaps where we don't know anything at all with, you know, a very educated kind of guess at what would have been there.
Yeah.
But along with that, there are places in the game which are, you know, where we don't have such gaps in our knowledge, where we do know what things would have looked like, and they're amazing. Wow. I think of somewhere that I know really well. Gemma will probably already be able to guess what I'm going to talk about here. Like the area of Deir al-Bahari and the Assasif, which is a particular part of the Theban cemeteries, not very far away from the Valley of the Kings, where I spent a few seasons working as a kind of young Egyptologist. And these days, yes, okay, you can look at the restored remains of temples and tombs in that area, set into the natural landscape, and the natural landscape won't have changed very much since ancient times. But actually, there's also a cafe and a coach park and a tarmac road and pylons and telegraph wires and lots of modern stuff, which is easy enough to ignore, but it's still, you know, so the what you see when you go to that landscape now isn't ancient. It's still 2021. Whereas what you see in the game strips away all those things, some of which actually have a really, I think, really bad impact on the way that you look at the landscape. It strips away all those things and restores the real life things, like people in costume, as it were, as they would have been, and then the sort of detritus of life. So something like a temple in ancient Egypt would have had lots of people wandering around, and it would have been probably smoky and smelly, and there would have been people praying, and there would have been people carrying things around and going about their business. And temples now have tourists in them only, you know. From that point of view, it isn't always very easy to visualize these places as they would have been. And now, you know, when I think about giving a talk about Deir al-Bahari, I will be thinking, do I want to use my own photo, which has got a load of tourists in it and a coach and I'm nearly swearing, choo-choo train that they use to deliver tourists to the site.
Really?
Yeah. Or do I go for the AC Origins version of it, which has got all of the kind of ephemeral stuff, which, you know, would have been in use for 5 years in the temple, then replaced and eventually removed. You know, all that stuff that was real. I think that in some ways that's better, you know?
Yeah, that's, to me, that's incredibly interesting, because you're seeing that, I mean, I guess not a shift, but you're seeing that shift towards these games filling in these gaps of our knowledge as such, or terms of our visualization, because obviously we can't see what ancient Egypt would look like. And so it becomes more useful in the classroom. Is that something, like you said, that you would perhaps try and incorporate that into your lessons? Do you think that as the games become more, increase their visual quality, do you think that more academics might start doing that, or there might be a general trend towards using games in academia, perhaps?
Possibly. In fact, I think there already is that trend, you know, because it's not just us that is doing a project like this. Other people have done similar things, and other people are doing projects that are along the same lines, but with different games, with different time periods, looking at different things to what we're looking at, like maybe looking at strategy and things like that, rather than what we've been looking at, which is a representation of an ancient culture. I don't necessarily think it's related to the graphics either, though, to be perfectly honest, because as I said about Pharaoh, you know, Pharaoh is an old game now, and it, although it still looks quite nice, you know, it was made to be on, you know, those like little square boxy monitors that we used to have. So you have to get a special like add-on or update just to make it stretch across a widescreen monitor. It's kind of that old. it's an excellent game because it teaches you things about the kind of goods that ancient Egyptians would have had, you know, the types of material that they were able to produce, and then the things that they would trade and who they traded them with, like different areas in the cities in the world that you could trade with, you know, like you would buy wood from Lebanon. They did buy wood from Lebanon. You know, it's those kind of things which I think are interesting in Pharaoh. And it's nothing to do with the graphics of the game. So although Origins and all of the later, well, all the Assassin's Creed games really have got pretty good graphics, and they do, you know, they get better and better each time they release one. Although that may help because people are able to visualize things, I don't think it's a sort of prerequisite for using a game in a lesson that it has to have absolutely good graphics, because it depends on what you're looking at and what you want to teach people about. For us, for our project, it's quite important because we're looking at representation and we want to talk about visualization. So for us, it is important. And for Assassin's Creed as a teaching tool, I think that it is important because what you want to look at is the environment and how they've produced, how they've represented this time period. So, I think, for instance, a good example of this probably would be Assassin's Creed Black Flag. Because that was the first one, really, where they had like really big ocean areas to look at. There's a little bit of sailing in Assassin's Creed 3, but with Black Flag, you know, most of the map is ocean because you're in the Caribbean. So it's like they needed the technology to be able to create that environment and make it look realistic before they could think about creating a game like that. So I do think in some ways, yes, it is important, but also not always. Sorry, that was a very long answer. Yes and no.
No. I mean, Black Flag is one of my favourite all-time games.
Black Flag is completely... I love Origins. I love its pieces. But I love Black Flag.
No, there's nothing like being a pirate. That's the thing.
Yeah. Well, the thing about Black Flag is, although most people... Yeah, sure, we might like the idea of being a pirate, but like, who knows how to sail a ship like that?
No,
you
know,
not very many people. And it gives you a way to experience something kind of like it, you know. It's not exactly how a ship would be sailed, because it's way harder. You can't sail the ship on your own, for instance. Whereas in the game, you just get on, you take the wheel, and off you go into the horizon.
Yeah.
Which is not particularly realistic. But the ships themselves, I have been told by colleagues who are... I always call them boaty people. Give them a little cutesy name, but that, you know, they're experts in maritime archaeology. That I've been told that actually, like, the things like the rigging and the way that the sails are on the ships the shapes of the boats, like those kind of things are actually quite good. So yeah, that's Black Flag for you.
Well, yeah, it's like, for, I know it's not the same, like in terms of visual quality. I don't know if you guys have played Sea of Thieves.
I've played the demo. I haven't played it since it's been released, and I don't think people know about Sea of Thieves.
Yeah, it's all a bit cartoony, but it kind of teaches you the basics of how to kind of start sailing on a ship. And you have to obviously cooperate with your teammate, and that's just one example of, you know, how games can teach you some stuff. So in general, would you say that games could start to be used more in the classroom?
Yeah.
Would you say? Maybe not in the place of textbooks, but as a complement to them, maybe?
Definitely.
Yeah, I think so for sure. I mean, like I say, I haven't done it yet, but I could imagine myself using screenshots. If not actually being in the game somehow. But I think the other thing that's probably at play here is, not to just be deliberately difficult, but I think it is partly about graphics, at least in as much as some of those images that I might use are almost like photorealistic now. Maybe this is more sort of the point kind of makes itself to me slightly more in that up until recently, my most recent experience of playing, other than the odd game on my iPhone, was a Master System. And when I think about how the Temple of Hatshepsut might have been rendered on a Master System 2 in like Alex Kidd in Miracle World or something, that would not have cut it alongside a good photograph of mine of an actual place. But AC Origins is that good. Yeah. But I think the other things that are at play, and I'm guessing here, are that increasingly the idea of playing video games and being immersed in video games is becoming more and more ubiquitous for the kinds of people who are students.
Mm-hmm.
So there's not in the same way going to be a barrier anymore in sort of saying to people, this is a screenshot from a video game. I suspect that for certain audiences, that still, when I think about the people I speak to, that might still be a bit of a weird thing. Whereas in the future, that's going to be much less weird. But more importantly, probably for the people on my side of the room, in a talk, it's going to be more and more and more something that's, it's going to be possible to draw on. And as lecturers are going more likely to be gamers, I guess.
Yeah.
And as those worlds kind of come together more and more, and gaming becomes much less niche than it was in the past and much more ubiquitous, and as the kind of educational possibilities begin to become more apparent, I can imagine that it will be much more possible. Mm. And we'll we might well even move away. When I say I talk about using screenshots, I'm still talking about doing a good old school lecture where I stand up and speak in front of some still images, and obviously I'm using digital stuff, PowerPoint or whatever, and a digital projector if I'm in a room, or Zoom or whatever, if I'm online or whatever, rather than like 35mm slides, which is how it was when I was a student.
Yeah.
But the outcome is exactly the same. Whereas in the future, if gaming is so much more embedded, if it's that bit easier to just flick apps when you're in the middle of a talk from, Keynote or PowerPoint or whatever it is, over to your game and just walk people through Del Bahari, then as I'm saying that, I'm kind of thinking, my God, that's what I should be doing. We'll see. I don't think we're quite there yet, but I feel like that's where we're going.
Yeah, I agree with you, Chris, but I actually think that the barrier here is the the technological side, because I was thinking about this for playing in the past, because obviously COVID is a problem for us, and that we can't meet up and have people in a hall. Because what I would have really liked to do for the final episode of playing in the past is to have people in a lecture theatre and have the game on the screen so that people here, Chris, myself, the other people who are joining in that session, can talk about it while I've got the game on the screen behind me that I can actively play on a really, really big screen so that they can all see it. Yeah. And that's what I really wanted to do, but it's not going to be possible because of COVID.
Damn COVID.
Yeah, honestly. But it also is a slight, even if COVID aside, it's a slight technological barrier, because how do I then do that? I can't be in the room during the presentation with my computer. I would have to take my computer to Southampton in order to do that, because the university definitely doesn't have in any of the lecture theatres a computer that is capable of running this game. So there's still a few kind of things that would have had to be worked out. And I am sure there is a way to do it, and people who are much more technologically inclined would probably be able to tell me how to do it. But it would be, you know, when you're sort of already used to how talks and panel discussions work, you know, particularly at the institution, they would be maybe less inclined to want to accommodate something that was going to be difficult. So we have to get past that barrier and say, actually, it's not difficult. You know, there are ways to do it, and you know, things like that. So, I think in the future that Chris is right. It may, as it becomes easier, and you know, computers are way more powerful now than they used to be, and more powerful computers become available for everybody, it might be easier to do stuff like that.
I'm going to take this like a personal challenge. So one, we are going to do an event in person, right?
Okay.
There we go.
I just thought of it, but now that you've suggested it, I think we should.
I've never said that to Chris before.
There we go. Figure out how to do this. Even if I put my Xbox
and
in
Ubisoft,
the Xbox.
Ubisoft, if you want to write a piece about this podcast, go ahead. I'll get publicity.
I know. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing though, Chris, taking the Xbox might be the way to do it, but then I'm like, well, how do we connect the Xbox to the project? You know, there's all these things that I don't know how to do that probably can be done that need to be worked out. I totally would love to do an event. I would love it to do an event like that. It would be amazing.
It's a great idea, because Gemma, I've had the same kind of line of thought as you with the platform. Like, I've always kind of had the idea in the back of my mind about perhaps streaming with, say, certain groups of people in order to produce content for the channel. And because of the technical, my lack of tech savviness, and because of COVID, I found it tricky to be able to figure out a way to kind of have people on stream, but they need their own equipment, but that might not work, meaning they can't play the games with me. And so it's just been, you know, like, it's great we can, you know, we can all call over Zoom, but as technology does eventually, it needs to get there, I think. And like I say, like, being there in person with people would also help, but it definitely, there is a barrier there to all of us, I'd say, at the moment. Completely agree with you.
Yeah, there is. But, you know, Chris has taken on the challenge now. We're doing it.
Chris.
I can already see how this would be possible.
Really?
So, yeah. Just via the Xbox, I think. Yeah. I'll need to fiddle about, but I think so.
Well, there we go. Exactly.
Or, you know, when the day comes when Max can handle the game. The new M1 processors are supposed to be amazing. So I don't know. I'd need a new computer, but not so, like, so, the first time I would have bought hardware in order to play a game. So.
No.
So if you were to run these events in the future, right, in these halls, which would be great, I'd definitely tune in. how much more is there to learn about Assassin's Creed Origin through the games themselves? You've streamed quite a bit, I know you have, but how many more streams could you do about that singular game, and what games in the future would you like to look at, do you think?
There is a lot to say. Like, when we first started discussing this, Chris, Kate and I sat down and we talked about potential topics for each of the sessions. So what we've done with this project is each of the sessions has got an invited expert on a particular subject area within ancient Egyptian history. And they relate their research that they're doing. So it's research they're already doing. It's research that they know about, a topic that they know about. They relate that to how it's presented in the game. And they sort of talk through the two of those things. But we had to choose from a very long list of topics. You know, just a few. Mm-hmm. And even the ones that that we have chosen, there is so much more to say about the topics that we've chosen that you could go on, you know, kind of endlessly, really, because there is only so much we can fit in a short lecture followed by a sort of tour with question and answers. Because people, you know, we're not trying to target experts already. We're trying to teach people who might want to just learn a bit more about ancient Egypt. So we don't want the lectures to be really, really long. You know, people want to get onto the bit where we're in the game and we start off with the lecture. So we sort of set the scene, if you like, with the lecture, so people know what it's going to be about. And all of the people we've had so far have done a really, really good job of integrating what their topic is with the way it appears in the game. So the slides that Chris and Carrie and Sarah did for us in the ones that we've just, the ones we've already completed, were really good. Like the looking at the things together, like Chris was just talking about, looking at Deir al-Bahri as it is, as it really is, and then looking at it in the game on a slide next to each other, or two slides. It's really important like that we do it that way, because otherwise, you know, we're essentially doing two completely separate things. And I wanted them to mesh, you know, I wanted them to join, so that you're joining the research of proper sort of academic people who are doing this for a job, with the game and with people who are interested. So it sort of bridges that gap between people thinking, you know, academics and experts are over there and we're over here as being gamers, not knowing that much. You know, it's I wanted them to join because we're all people, you know. There's lots of things we don't know.
Exactly. Well, gaming is just such a great medium to do that. It's so diverse, and it can touch many different people with different lives and backgrounds, and and you know, it's just it's that visualization, but it's also what you attach to it at the end of the day, whether that's a game, for example, Halo. You know, recently, I'm not going to plug it, but I might do. Pixel Politics Explains, which is a new feature series, part of the platform, explains the political influences behind the first Halo game. And so when people attach to the Halo franchise and they're like, oh, wait, that's got Cold War influences, that interests me. Or it's got some theocratic influences and that interests me too. So it's like connecting those two worlds is very interesting, and it's got great potential. And what you guys are doing are fantastic. Like, I'm in, you know, admiration of it, to be honest. It's really good.
I'm just glad people like it, to be honest.
No, honestly,
I'm really glad that people are enjoying it. And if people want to see different games, different ideas discussed, that's great. You know, I'd like to hear from people what they want to know about. Obviously, at the moment, we picked this topic because we know about it. You know, ancient Egypt is a topic that we know about. But our colleague, Kate Shepherd, you know, she is also a historian of science and technology. You know, she knows a lot about the 19th century. And so Assassin's Creed Syndicate is set in the 19th century. And that's been something that we've talked about already, as to whether or not we can do some episodes on Syndicate. Because that would bring, you know, that would allow us to explore a completely different time period through the same sort of medium, basically. So there's definitely a lot more for us to do with it and to discuss.
Yeah, and of course you've got Odyssey, which is a huge game, even bigger than Origins, I think. So that would be, you know, I guess a great one to dive into. Although it would take hours and hours and hours to get past the first section.
I haven't played Odyssey yet. I've got it downloaded. I've opened it up and like I've opened up kind of the starter quest, but I haven't. The reason I haven't is because I was doing another playthrough of Black Flag. So sometimes I just stream the games without any other expert or with any kind of view to doing anything knowledgeable. Uh-huh. Just, you know, sit there and be a pirate for a bit.
It's the best life.
Yes, best life. Like literally, sometimes I just sail around and fight other ships. I don't. I did one stream where I was supposed to be doing the main quest because I'd said to people, you know, come on, have a look. I'll do the main quest. You can see like, you know, how Blackbeard's represented and stuff like that. I literally just sailed around and sank other boats and talked to the people in the chat for the entire stream. But it was fun. It was fun. I had a great time. But we've already, Odyssey, I haven't approached it yet just because it's going to take a significant amount of my time to go through it. and you know, to think about it properly. So I've downloaded it. I just haven't fully jumped into it yet. But I also know that Odyssey has already been sort of semi-explored by other academics.
Okay.
There is, I'm not sure if it's a series or if it was just a one-off thing, but I think it was Oxford University that did it. It's on YouTube.
Okay.
There is a video on YouTube of some academics talking about Odyssey and how it represents ancient Greece. So there is already a little bit of work done on that one. With Valhalla, I have started to play it. I haven't got that far, again, because you can just raid monasteries and stuff, so yeah. I just go around river raiding. I think Valhalla's interesting because it's got two very different parts of the world. So you start off in Norway and then you come to England. So there's quite a lot to talk about, I think, in terms of the representation of those two different places and the different cultures that are within them.
Yeah, so do you think say VR technology or virtual reality in the future, do you think it's going to it's going to be used in games more frequently, but do you think it could be used as an educational tool as well? Obviously you've got tools in the military, we know about that and how they help military training, but in terms of games, like if you could step into say an Assassin's Creed Origin, ancient Egypt world, I'm not saying you have to be going about slaying people with a sword or whatever, but like imagine you could just step into that world. Is that an exciting proposition for the future? And like, how would that change your platform as well? Like, that'd be mad.
I what you're basically asking is, what would it be like if they really recreated the Animus?
Yeah.
The Animus is the thing in Assassin's Creed Origins that allows you to enter all these different time periods. Oh, you know this now. You probably know this now because you have in fact played the game. Sorry. When Chris started the game, I was like, I don't think he knows the kind of the modern side of the story. But yeah, if we could actually make an Animus, it would be incredible.
Mm-hmm.
If you could step in, like literally step into these worlds, you could learn a lot.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's slightly different because in Assassin's Creed, the Animus recreates memories. So in theory, it's recreating something real, whereas I don't think we're ever going to be able to get to a point where we can do that. But we might one day get to a point where we have a machine that you can like lie and sit in, whatever, that will plug you into a virtual world. You would be able to learn a lot from that, but it would be important to consider who created that virtual world. Why did they create it?
Mm-hmm.
What have they used to create that? Because those are all influences as well that might not be kind of realistic. You know, they might not be accurately representing the past. So that's something to think about too.
I think that's a great question, and this is something that really, really interests me.
Mm-hmm.
Partly less so with an Egyptology hat on, and more with a kind of technology geek and science fiction fan hat on. But on no kidding, since I was an undergraduate, and this is a long time ago in a different century, I have for a long time been thinking that like virtual reality is just coming, like full immersion virtual reality is coming. And, in fact, probably neither of you are old enough to remember this, but actually from the early 90s, we were being told this was coming. And there were a series of Hollywood movies in the 90s where, you know, like Lawnmower Man, that kind of thing, where, you know, this happened. I love the idea. I haven't yet invested in any kind of headset or anything. I have a, Google Cardboard VR thing. And in fact, I shot an entire documentary. I did all the filming for an entire documentary, which was filmed in full 360 degree VR a few years ago, and which has been shelved because it was being made by a news company for a news story that never happened, which is very annoying because I was really looking forward to being the presenter of a full 360 VR documentary. Anyway,
that sounds fun.
was great fun. It was very weird. Sorry, tangent. It was very weird because the entire crew, because it was literally full 360 degrees, unlike normal filming where there's you and then there's a camera and behind the camera, whatever it looks like on the screen, there's like, you know, 10 people behind the camera. In this, everybody has to be completely out of shot. So I really had to do all of my lines with nobody in shot at all, just a very weird 360 degree get up of like about six GoPros all lashed together. anyway, this is a tangent. I really think if games could go 100% VR, that would be amazing. But on the other side of this, there's also the possibility that people have already built full 3D VR versions of real monuments in Egypt that you can go and visit. Wow. It's interesting, I think, that this the Ministry of Antiquities in Egypt has made a lot of these of sites that it hasn't been possible to visit in the last year or so. And they made them, there was a while where about every week they were making a new one available online, and it's really not taken off. People have, as far as I can tell, this has not been a thing. People have not gone to these places. I think that's probably partly because actually people had, even in the pandemic, plenty of other stuff to occupy them, plenty of other Netflix and playing in the past lectures and things like that. but also, and maybe because it's still a little bit beyond what people kind of understand and get. But the other thing I think which is really crucial here is that if those things are the next best thing to being on the site, what's really important to remember is that being on the site isn't necessarily that great unless you've got loads of really good info to back it up. So being in a tomb in the Valley of the Kings is great, you know, and it's wow, it's, you know, it's wonderful. But it takes somebody who really knows what they're talking about to help you to explain what the hell's going on in the decoration. Everything's very colourful, and that's amazing. And the hieroglyphs look amazing, and there's lots of weird things on the walls, but it needs for somebody to explain that well.
Yeah.
So I kind of feel like obviously there's the problem that the tech, like we were saying before, it doesn't yet exist.
Yeah.
People aren't in the habit yet, even if the tech does exist, people aren't ready for it in the way that they weren't ready for online lectures until they had no choice. The other thing is that it isn't going only to be the VR experience. It's going to have to be a way of marrying that with really good info. Mm-hmm. And I think the Discovery Tour in AC Origins is probably the best pointer I've seen to how that could work. In the as you said, Jack, earlier, games are still, to a large extent, about killing somebody with a sword or whatever.
Yeah,
and the educational component is something different, and that's, as I was saying earlier, that's one of the reasons why I've enjoyed AC Origins so much. Because, quite to be really honest with you, I'm not that bothered about killing somebody with a sword. I do just want to wander around and see things and learn about things. And I think that area of this sort of gaming might well be the gateway to that kind of thing. I'm not sort of seeing it yet, but partly just because I'm an enthusiast for this kind of thing.
Yeah.
I love the idea that it would be possible, and I can see huge amounts of potential for us eventually to have one of those Star Trek Next Generation things where you can just walk into like ancient Egypt or the Wild West, or you know,
you mean the holodeck?
Is that what it's called? Yes,
the holodeck. Yeah.
I'm not particularly a Trekkie,
my brother was. That's why I know. I did not get away with not watching Star Trek when I was growing up because my brother loved it.
Yeah, my father liked Star Trek, but I'm a Star Wars fan. So you've got that divide in the house.
I'll be honest with you, we had everything basically. Yeah, if it was sci-fi, my father as well is a big sci-fi fan. He basically likes everything sci-fi, but yeah, I didn't get away with growing up without sci-fi, so I'm sort of generally familiar with most of them and various kind of things that attach to them, ideas that attach to them. So yeah.
So Gemma and Chris, thank you for joining us. It's been a pleasure to have you on. Where can people catch you? When's your next playing in the past project as well?
Okay, so the next Playing in the Past episode will, as always, be on Twitch, which is my Twitch channel, which is twitch.tv/mutey, M-U-T-E-Y, with an underscore after it. You can find us on Sorry, I'll just tell you a bit about that one. Our good friend Heather Abdelgar will be talking about the representation of the different people in the game. So Heather is Egyptian. She will be talking about how Egyptians are presented, how the Greeks and how the Romans are presented in the game, and a little bit about kind of the way of life that has been shown in the game. Which we can't wait to talk to her about that. That will be myself, Heather, and Chris on the 13th of May. You can find me on Twitter at Newty_says. and that's it, really. We also do have a website, so if you typed in playing in the past, you would come across our website. But that's really just a place for us to just announce what the next session is. Basically, there's not a great deal on that. And the old videos of Playing in the Past also go on the Playing in the Past YouTube channel, which you can find on the website, on the Twitch channel, or on my Twitter.
Thank you.
Sorry, that was very long. Go ahead.
Chris. No, not at all.
Well, if anyone's interested, you can find me at Chris Naunton here and there, Twitter and Facebook and Instagram. But yeah, more importantly, Google Playing in the Past.
Thank you, Chris. And I had a look at your website. And when your tours are back up, I'm going to come on one of your tours.
do you mean a virtual tour or do you mean a real life tour?
Proper real life tour. Like, well, I love it. Egypt interests me since I was a kid. So I'm like, I'm coming along to one of these.
Great. Well, in fact, the thing I have to do when I get off this call is announce the next Missing Tombs trip, which has just gone live this morning. So, yeah, for all that I've said, you know, all this, the virtual tours and everything are amazing, and I can't wait to get into Egypt in virtual reality. There's still nothing like really going, so I can't wait to get back.
Me neither. But thank you both of you for joining me. Make sure to check out Playing in the Past. Both Gemma and Chris on their social media channels. That's Pixel Politics episode number 9. I think there'll be one more left in the series. We'll cut it off after 10 and then take a break and then hit series 2. But yeah, thank you. And I hope you enjoyed the podcast.